Hej, det här är Tobias Henriksson på Tänk om. Nu finns det ett nytt sätt att stötta oss direkt via Acast. Följ länken i avsnittsbeskrivningen eller gå in på supporter.acast.com/tankom. Tack för ditt stöd.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Han är amerikanen som flyttade till Sverige och gjorde succé som skådespelare. Jag är europeen som inte förstår vad som händer i landet i väst. Tillsammans försöker vi få ordning på det. Jag heter Tobias Henriksson. Och du lyssnar på Tänk om. Välkomna till Tänk om, en podcast som granskar konspirationsteorier och myter. Jag heter Tobias Henriksson. Innan vi går in på dagens ämne måste jag såklart påminna er om att ni kan stötta den här podden genom att logga in på patreon.com/tankom och donera en summa som podden får per publicerat avsnitt. Det är alltså patreon.com/tankom. Som medlem på Patreon får du olika fördelar, som till exempel att du har möjlighet att lyssna på Tänkoms avsnitt lite tidigare än alla andra. Du kan också göra engångsdonationer via Swish eller Acast supporterfunktion. All information om hur ni gör engångsdonationer hittar ni i avsnittsbeskrivningen. Men nu över till dagens ämne. USA har upplevt ett märkligt år med en global pandemi, politiska slitningar, val som påstås vara riggade och inte minst den stormning av Kapitolium i början av 2021 som dödade en polis och fyra demonstranter. Men egentligen har väl landet i väst inte varit sig likt de senaste fyra åren? Eller vad säger ni? För oavsett om man tycker bra eller illa om Donald Trump så kan vi konstatera att politiken han fört stuckit ut rejält jämfört med tidigare presidenters. Allt ifrån att han ville bygga en mur mot Mexiko, en mur som dessutom grannlandet skulle betala, till att han ville köpa Grönland. Mellan det har han kallat Nordkoreas ledare för kort och tjock. Och dessutom drivit på ett stort antal konspirationsteorier som antingen kommit direkt från honom eller från hans följare. För mig som svensk har det hela påmint om en slags cirkus, en slags lätt underhållning i syfte att locka väljare. Men händelserna vid Kapitolium visade att saker och ting var värre än så. För att få grepp om hur en amerikansk medborgare ser på situationen och för att få någon form av förklaring till vad som händer kontaktade jag min vän, skådespelaren och manusförfattaren Schiaffino Mosara. I Sverige är han mest känd som upphovsman till och huvudrollsinnehavare i serien We Got This som gick på SVT. Serien har prisats både i Sverige och internationellt och vunnit flera stora priser. Men Skiff, som han kallas, är inte bara en framgångsrik mediaman utan också en klok herre med stor koll på sitt forna hemland USA. Han ställde mer än gärna upp på att prata med mig om myter, konspirationsteorier och de senaste 4 åren i USA. Den här intervjun gjordes på engelska då Skiff är mer bekväm med sitt modersmål än med svenska. Veckan efter att det här släpps första gången kommer en svensk version där jag och Dan Hörning gestaltar den här intervjun. För er som har svårt att hänga med i Skiffs amerikanska engelska kan det kanske vara läge att lyssna på det avsnittet istället. Eller i alla fall lyssna på det också för att få med allt som sägs. Till sist vill jag betona att de åsikter som framkommer i avsnittet är gästens egna. Tänk om som podd försöker vara neutrala, framförallt när det kommer till politik. Men i det här fallet är de teorier och myter så tätt förknippade med valet och med Donald Trump att vi inte kan låta bli att komma in på det ämnet. Ha också i minnet att det här spelades in bara dagar efter den stormning av Kapitolium som vi nämnde innan, så ämnet var fortfarande nytt och brännande hett när vi pratade om det. För er som inte hört Skiff tidigare, till exempel i podden Palmemordet, kan det vara bra med en presentation. Så här berättar han om sitt liv fram tills idag.
Yeah, so basically I'm an American, but I've lived in Sweden for almost 15 years, I guess. I'm originally from Georgia, so I do come from the southern part of the US, which is, you know, I guess probably in some part maybe why you thought it might be interesting to talk to me, because I come from what many people refer to as Trump country at the moment. I live and work here in Stockholm as a screenwriter and an actor. Some of your listeners may have seen We Got This, where I sort of in a lot of ways sort of, of course, it's about, you know, the murder of Olof Palme, but really, in a lot of ways, it's about sort of a satire on American culture and how Americans tend to sort of, no matter where they are in the world, they tend to think that they can kind of accomplish anything. It's this kind of, you know, the sort of ridiculous side of American exceptionalism, I guess you could call it. I just thought that would make a funny character if you had an American trying to solve the murder of Olof Palme. Like, how hard could this possibly be? What the fuck? It's a big deal. yeah, so that's basically me in a nutshell, I guess.
And if the listeners of Tänk Om wants to hear more about We Got This and about you, then we have, I'd say, 2 or 3 episodes, maybe? 2, 3 episodes of Palmemordet podcast about it and about the series. When you grew up and lived there, what was your, what should I say, how did you see the democratic process, and was it the picture where everyone waves their American flag and really loved their president and so on?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, when I grew up, it was a lot less divisive, right? I mean, sure, there was still a lot of political debate. But the era that I grew up in was an era where, you know, you could disagree with someone politically, but you could still go have a beer with that person at the end of the day. That's something I truly miss, because that doesn't even seem to be possible anymore. I was sort of coming into my own political awareness in the sort of late 80s, early 90s. So I lived through, you know, the Reagan years, the first Bush years, the Clinton years, the second Bush years, and then, of course, Obama. Well, I was here. I think I was living in Sweden by the time Obama was elected, actually.
Because you're here to talk with me about a bit about American politics from an American standpoint or American view. Have you seen anything like what you've seen the last 4 years with Donald Trump as president, looking back at George Bush, Ronald Reagan, and so on?
No, never, never. I mean, I don't. Well, okay, for starters, I don't think it's really. I think it's important for people to realize, especially I think from an outside, you know, for these Swedish people kind of looking from the outside in towards America. I think the most important thing to remember is that there's really nothing unique or different or new necessarily about Trump. Trump is essentially like the Republican Frankenstein in a way. Like, he embodies everything that the Republican Party has been standing for and fighting for decades. He just has a very different way of talking about it. And instead of like trying to hide behind some kind of, you know, typical political double talk type situation, he just kind of comes right out and says that Mexicans are rapists. Fuck those guys. We don't want them here. And even the Republicans, I would say, were not ready for Trump, because they clearly didn't think he was going to win the nomination 4 years ago. I mean, they thought, I mean, the moment he came out and said Mexicans are rapists, I think everybody, including myself, thought, well, that's political suicide. Boy, was I wrong. I didn't realize that there was a lot of people out there that were waiting and had been waiting for a long time for a politician who talks like Trump, who says what they want people to say.
Okay, so do you think that's the most important thing, that he speaks out clearly about what he wants? And I mean, we have had politicians all over the world speaking to their people, but not in this tone, on in this, with this kind of I don't know, aggressiveness maybe. So why do you think so many people voted for Donald Trump or the Republicans here, and what is it that makes him special for them?
I think it's precisely that he speaks, that he speaks his mind in a way that, you know, I mean, we all know that politicians, all of us get frustrated with politicians because they so rarely say, it's hard to imagine that they truly say what we think they mean, or what they really, it's like, you don't really mean that. Maybe more so in Sweden. I don't know. I'm not a very good judge of that. But in America, for sure. And I think a lot of people, and I think this is true on the Democratic side too, because we experienced this frustration 4 years ago. I mean, I personally did not want to vote for Hillary Clinton. I wanted to vote for Bernie Sanders. And I feel like, personally, I feel like the Democratic Party sort of decided that Hillary would be the better candidate, and they mobilized around her and worked to try and make sure that Bernie did not get the nomination. So I think you have a lot of people on the left who are also very frustrated with their party, because, you know, I think most people in America feel like their party's not actually listening to them. And then in comes along this, you know, silver-tongued con man who says, I'm going to give you everything that you've ever wanted. I'm going to build the wall. Mexico's going to pay for it. No matter how ridiculous that idea was, and how we, most of us knew that that was never going to happen, they bought it. Hook, line, and sinker. They were all in. They were like, ah, finally.
But as we talk about Donald Trump, I mean, he's not the first president who has used lies to enhance his position. I mean, for a very recent example, we had Bill Clinton and the sex scandal, or what do you want to call it. But I mean, Bill Clinton doesn't get like a special page on Washington Post listing all his lies. Is that because they are two different people, or because there are not that many lies to debunk, or what say?
I would say that Well, one answer to your question would be that nobody in history has ever, no president in history has ever lied at the rate that Trump lies. The other reason, I think, is probably because we've also never had, look, all presidents lie, all politicians lie. But the one thing that we've never really had until recently, Trump is certainly the first Twitter president. And now you have a president who is essentially using social media as a way to, you know, get through directly to his voters. And he can say anything he wants on there. There's nothing to stop. You know, once upon a time prior to, you know, if you have any listeners that don't remember what life was like prior to social media, we used to have these things called newspapers. We used to have these things called news channels or news networks, and they were bound by something that was called journalistic integrity, right? Which meant that the stories and the news and the things that you would say in the papers and on television needed to be backed up by facts. Now you have social media, and journalistic integrity is basically dead. He doesn't have to adhere to that. He doesn't have to, you know, if this were 30 years ago, you know, Trump could go in and do an interview with the Washington Post and all these crazy things that he was saying, be like, well, we can't print this stuff because we'll know if it's true. So it's making social media is basically making it easier for people to lie. It's making it easier for, you know, people to kind of spread lies. There's a famous quote from one of my favorite authors, Mark Twain, an American author, who said, a lie can travel halfway across the world before the truth can even manage to get its shoes on. You know what I mean? And it's like, once the lie is out there, it's very hard to pull it back in.
I think we have something like, if you repeat a lie long time enough, it becomes the truth. Something like that as well, yeah.
Yeah, well, that always reminds me of the Bush administration. That's kind of how they did their lies. It was like, Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. We just say that, or just keep saying that Iraq had something to do with 9/11. It didn't matter that 3 years later that it had already been proven that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, because 75% of the country already believed it.
You and I are both interested in the Olof Palme case. And it's almost like that when Christer Pettersson was stood trial for the murder. Very many Swedes thought that he must be the murderer, and I mean, it he wasn't. But they kept repeating it. We had all this, I don't know, clues, this evidence.
Plus, everybody knows it's Scandium Manon. They said so, right? and now that's the new bullshit, you know, because they're just going to repeat that and most people are going to buy it, I guess. I don't know. I don't know if most people are going to buy that.
I think the last time I saw something about it was that 80% of the Swedish people didn't believe in Scandium Manon as a murderer. If Trump becomes president, as he was, and it doesn't that mean that there is a need for it? Someone who talks his mind, something who says what the audience want to hear, maybe. I mean, doesn't he fill a hole that former politicians haven't, I don't know, discovered?
Sure, I guess you could say that. I don't know. I mean, honestly, I think I have to say, like, I think specifically to Trump supporters, I don't think you can really have a conversation about Trump and his supporters without bringing race into the conversation. For me, this is very much about white privilege. You know, these are people who, you know, either grew up in the 50s or are children of, you know, people who obviously grew up in the 50s. And these are the kind of people who, you know, they feel like they're losing their country somehow, you know, as the world becomes more progressive, you know, you're legalizing gay marriage, things like that. You know, these people feel like they've lost something, right? And for me, it's always been sort of a clear sign that you are of the privileged class when you perceive the idea of equality as oppression, right? You've got the Black Lives Matter people asking for equal rights. This is not like I have an apple and these people are asking to take a bite out of my apple. That's not what's going on here. They're just asking for their own fucking apple. That's it. You know what I mean? And it's like, to me, it's ridiculous that these people can't actually, you know what? That's not true. It's not that it's ridiculous that they can't understand it. The real problem, in my opinion, is that the politicians, and this is true on both sides, but I think it's more true on the Republican side, is that they work to divide people. Because the only way that you can get them to show up year after year and vote for you is to make them angry about the other guy, right? It's always about being angry about the other. Like, hey, look at what they got. You didn't get that. You didn't get a free handout. You know what I mean? You worked for it. I mean, it's ridiculous. We have this class structure in America. It's not an accident. It's there on purpose. My favorite actual explanation of it is, I don't know if you know the comedian George Carlin. You should definitely check him out. He's pretty amazing. He's no longer alive, sadly. I think he would have a lot of interesting things to say right now. he had my favorite explanation of the American class structure. He basically would say things like, you know, as long as you keep the lower and the middle classes fighting with each other, then the politicians and all the rich people can run off with all the money. It's a fairly simple thing, but it happens to work, right? So he would say things like, you know, race, religion, you know, ethnic, national background, jobs, income, education, social status, sexuality. These are all the things that they want us to fight about, right? They remind us of everything that separates us, that makes us different, in an effort to distract us from the fact that all they really care about is their own political power or their own financial gain. And you know, the sort of funny punchline to this bit would be that he would always say, you know, the upper class, they make all the money and they pay none of the taxes. The middle class pays all the taxes and does all the work. And the poor people are there just to scare the shit out of the middle class, to keep them showing up for their jobs, basically.
But talking about class and even race, I mean, I always get the feeling that it is more difference between, say, white and colored people in the U.S. than in Sweden, for example, and even a bigger difference between the poor and the middle class and then the rich. Is there any way to describe how the U.S. looks looking at class and race issues?
Well, I think the biggest difference is, well, the people, like the immigrants that you have here, you know, I guess historically have come here from some other place, either just plain old immigrating to what they feel is a better place or fleeing some other kind of conflict in the country that they come from. Whereas in America, especially with consideration to the African-American community, I mean, it's not a big secret. Everybody knows that we have this, you know, America's original sin is essentially this history of slavery. And it has been, you know, a slow sort of a very slow effort in order to atone for that original sin, I would say, in my opinion. These Trump supporters will tell you, like, well, Jesus Christ, I mean, you can vote, you've got all this other stuff, like, we gave you all these rights, like, what do you want now? And it's like, well, they still don't have equal rights. So that's all they really want. You know what I mean? and it's, you know, in a lot of American cities, I think it's probably hard for maybe some of your Swedish, or actually maybe not. That seems sort of similar, at least here in Stockholm, where, you know, you have cities where all the white people live on one side of town and all the black people live on the other side of town. That happens here. I see that here in Stockholm. I see that in other places in Sweden. And part of that is that, you know, that's, you know, there's a sense of economic segregation, right? And the reason why these people all live on one side of town, you know, they get a bad, I've seen that conversation in Sweden many times where we're like, well, all these people, they all congregate together over in Rinkeby. And it's like, well, it's the only place they can afford to live, right? So of course they're going to live there. If they could live in a lovely three bedroom apartment in Vasastan, they would, but they can't. You know what I mean? So it's, there's a lot of that economic segregation in the US. Yeah, for sure. And then when you know, in the rare occasions where it breaks down, oftentimes it does lead to, you know, maybe not necessarily violence, but, you know, a black doctor moving into a white neighborhood, it's not uncommon. We'll experience, you know, some uncomfortable conversations with their neighbors or someone painting something on their garage door, you know, that you would rather not read. Olof Palme famously claimed that traveling through the southern part of the United States is what turned him into a socialist. Always found that kind of fascinating, especially having grown up in the South, because I can say I've always felt quite fortunate having grown up in the South. You know, a lot of people sort of become a product of the environment that they grow up in. And in some ways, I guess I am. But one of the things that I've always been quite proud of is that I managed to escape the South without being a racist, which is no easy task when you're surrounded by racists.
Sure. But nowadays, I mean, you're active on social media, etc. Is it hard for you as as being from Georgia, from the southern parts, to raise these kind of issues? I mean, with racism and violence from the Republican side, and how should I say, is it harder for you because you were raised in the southern parts of the US?
I can say this, I go through phases with it. I go through phases where I feel really engaged, and like many other people, I feel like I have something to say that I think is useful to the conversation. And I also go through phases where I feel like, why am I doing this? This isn't my job. It's not my job to be getting into these Facebook typing wars with people who, you know, if the goal of an argument is to change someone's mind, you've already lost. You know what I mean? You're never going to change these people's minds. I do find that it's kind of interesting. The thing that I find most interesting about when I interact on social media is actually when I try to explain to Swedish people that as an American living here for the last 15 years, but also having been coming here for the last 20 years, because I got married, 22 years ago, I got married almost actually to my Swedish wife. I've always been a little disturbed at how I see the Americanization of Sweden kind of creeping in, so to speak. And on one level, it's quite fun, right? It's like, you know, yay, we can all go to the grocery store and get pulled pork now. That's fun, right? That's a very American thing. And now it's here and I'm happy about that. That's great. But when I see parties like SD and Moderaterna and other parties kind of pulling pages from like the George Bush playbook, you know, where you say you're doing this, but you're actually doing that kind of thing, or watching the way that they talk about immigrants, or watching the way that they talk about like how they picture Swedish society. You know, they're basically trying to pretend that they're not what they really are. And that's a very American kind of political spin doctor type speech. And when I bring these things up on social media, I think I just don't find a lot of people are paying attention to this in Sweden so much. It's very weird. Swedish politics are really weird to me as an American, because I feel like I'm being very general now, but I think Swedes have way too much faith in their politicians to do the right thing. I don't think they're paying near enough attention to what's going on, to be honest. And I say that admittedly, not, it's not like I'm paying attention to it every day either, but, you know, that's just my take on it. The hard part for me, really, honestly, is, you know, coming from Trump country, obviously, I have a lot of friends and family back home who all voted for Trump. My mother voted for Trump. My grandmother voted for Trump. I mean, you know, we have this rule where we don't talk about politics when I go home because we just want to keep things civil. And they're good people. They're not bad people. They're not monsters. They really are. They're lovely people. But at the same time, I think for me, especially after what happened a few days ago, I feel like I don't know how to, I'm struggling over the last 48 hours to figure out how I'm going to have the next conversation that I have with my mother. I haven't spoken to her since this happened. And I just really don't know what I'm going to say to her. I'm having a hard time with that, actually.
I can understand that. But let's go back to what happened just a few nights ago, because at the, help me out, the Capitolium, Capitol building?
The Capitol building, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. As I understand it, the Congress were voting formally for Joe Biden as president, and Trump had more or less encouraged his followers to be there and to raise their voice for what he called a fixed election or fake election or whatever you want to call it.
He called it a stolen election.
Is that a fair recap of the situation before it got out of hand?
Yeah, more or less. I think so. Essentially, what they were doing in Congress is what they do every 4 years. It's normally an incredibly boring procedural task that does not normally wind up on television, where they're simply certifying the electoral votes, and they go through them state by state, and then they all go home and eat a steak or whatever the hell they want to do. Prior to this event, Trump was attempting to pressure Mike Pence because, I don't know, maybe some of your listeners don't realize the vice president is actually the president of the Senate. So the vice president oversees procedural processes like this. Also, if there were ever a 50-50 split in the Senate, if there were 50 Democrats and 50 Republicans, it would be the vice president's job to cast the tie-breaking vote. It looks as if that's probably what we're going to see in this next administration, because I think we are 50-50 now after the Georgia election, and Kamala Harris will be the tie-breaking vote. Anyway, so it's his job to oversee those procedures, and Trump was pressuring him to basically change the results of the or to throw out some of the contested, so-called contested or protested electoral votes from places like Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Michigan and Georgia, which would make it that Trump would have won the election. Pence, as the vice president and the president of the Senate, does not have the authority to do that, and Pence knew that. And the moment that he spoke on the House, on the Senate floor, saying that that was not his intention to do this, this was a Democratic fair election, we're going to go through these votes and we're going to certify this election. That was the moment that they stormed the Capitol building.
And I mean, when we say that they stormed the building, it wasn't like two or three people going in there and saying, hey, we don't want this result. It looked really violent, I must say. I mean, we ended up with, I think, was it 4 dead protesters and 1 dead police?
Correct. Yeah, that's correct. And to be fair to you, okay, so to be clear to your listeners, prior to these people showing up in front of the Capitol building, I think it's important to sort of, I wrote this down actually. These are the exact words that Trump said. He said, we will never give up. We will never concede. Our country has had enough, and we will not take it anymore. We will stop the steal. We're going to walk down Pennsylvania Avenue, and we're going to the Capitol, right? So here you have a situation where he loses an election, right? He convinces his minions that it's stolen, challenges the results in courts, loses every time due to the fact that he has zero evidence. So he turns to his people and convinces them that they are essentially the last line of defense in an effort to save democracy. It, to me, that is like literally the definition of treason, plain and simple.
Sure. But do you think, I mean, Trump, he was very outspoken about going to the Capitol building and stuff. But do you think that even he would have imagined this situation happening? Or do you think it was, I mean, was it planned from his side that it's going to be riots, is going to be violence, and I can benefit from it because now everybody can see that the people doesn't accept the election? Or was it just like, go there away with your flags and stuff, but not, what do you think?
In all honesty, as much as I dislike Trump, I have a really hard time imagining that these guys breaking into the Capitol building was all part of his master plan. Honestly, I don't think that that's what he thought was going to happen. I think he thought that they would go down there, and I definitely think he thought that they would go down there and raise hell, you know, maybe throw some things and, you know, just be a real sort of mob-like force to be reckoned with. You know, it's a great photo op, right? As they're inside certifying what he's calling a stolen election, you have the true patriots, so to speak, as he would call them, standing outside protesting this, you know, this horrible assault on democracy. I think that's kind of where it ended for him. I don't think he necessarily thought they would break into the building. That being said, the one part of this story which I find kind of the most fascinating and upsetting, and the one part of the story that I think I will be probably following the closest, is, you know, with regard to the actual break-in and the entry of the Capitol building, I find it a little insane that America, a nation that spends somewhere north of $750 billion on military defense, and in less than 2 hours, the U.S. Capitol building is taken over by this gang of flag-waving rednecks and some jackass with horns on his head wearing a fucking Chewbacca outfit. How the hell does that happen?
It's a really good question. And I mean, do you have an explanation? Because I was going to draw a parallel to the Black Lives Matter demonstrations, where there were a lot more, as far as I can could see, police and security. And here it was like, I don't know, but obviously not enough.
Here's what we know. What we know is that both the FBI, these are all news stories that you can go out there and read right now. Both the FBI and the National Guard contacted the Capitol Police prior to 2 or 3 days prior to this rally and said, hey, we assume that you need us. What do you want us to do? And the Capitol Police said, nah, we're good.
We can handle this.
We're fine. We handle these things all the time. It's going to be a free speech rally. Not a big deal. It's not going to turn violent. They called again. So twice the FBI and the National Guard called, and twice the Capitol Police said, no, 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 we're good. We're fine. The other thing that we know, there is video footage of some of these Capitol guards opening the barricades and letting these people onto the Capitol grounds. There are images and videos of Capitol Police officers taking selfies with the protesters inside the building after they had breached the Capitol building. We know that the chief of the Capitol Police has resigned, but I think there will definitely be an investigation. So that's what we know. And if there's any kind of like sort of possibility that there's some kind of like crazy real like true to life conspiracy, and I mean that in the truest sense of the word. I don't mean that like wackadoodle crazy people. I just mean like the literal definition of conspiracy is two people conspiring together to do some nefarious thing. If there is going to be a conspiracy, it's going to be there somewhere. It's going to be something like we're going to find out eventually that Trump told the Capitol Police to tell the National Guard to fuck off or something like that. I don't know. I don't know what we're going to learn. I just feel like there's a story here, and it's going to take time for it to really, it's going to take time for the full story to emerge, I think.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I just want to point out that the difference between, because Tänk om, or what if in English, is looking at conspiracy theories and myths in different areas. But, I mean, we have photos, we have video material, as you say, and then it's not a conspiracy theory, then it could be a conspiracy, as you say, two or more people, let the writers in or whatever.
Sure. Yeah, and what did they do when they broke in? They ransacked the place and stole some shit and went onto the Senate floor so that they could take selfies. Like, how fucking pathetic is that?
I mean, I was thinking about when I heard about this the first time. I was thinking about the Facebook group that wanted to raid Area 51, and showed up maybe, I don't know, but less than 100 people drinking a beer, looking at the fences. I really thought it would be something like that, but this escalated very quickly, I must say, looking from a Swedish perspective.
This is a bigger deal than UFOs, I think. This is, and that's the other thing. Here's something that I really think they need to sort of get out of American politics. And this happens every year or every election cycle. And both parties are guilty of this. When you have parties who will come or politicians who will come out and say things like, you know, this election is a fight for the soul of our nation. I'm sorry, dude, but it's just not. And that kind of rhetoric just makes people crazy. It really makes people crazy. And I don't like it when Democrats say it. I don't like it when Republicans say it, because it inspires the craziest of us to do really horrible things, I think.
But let's focus on just one word. I mean, Donald Trump called the rioters he called them patriots, for example. And I mean, in my view, a patriot is someone that goes by the law and hails the democracy instead of rioting. So I mean, am I totally wrong? But I wouldn't even dream of calling them patriots, because patriots are doing the best thing for their country.
Look, these people are not patriots, okay? You know, if you want to tell me, I mean, you saw, again, I've seen these guys before, but I saw pictures of them from the riots as well, where you have these guys walking around with T-shirts that say 6 million wasn't enough, in reference to the Jews who were killed by the Nazis during World War II. I'm sorry, dude. I'm not counting him as a patriot. I'm not going to go there.
But the white supremacist, is that more accurate?
Yeah, sure. I'd say so. I would say that these people have more in common with ISIS than they do with their hero Jesus. You know, they're convinced that they're on some kind of a righteous path, and they will go to any extremist measure to get there.
But isn't that ironic? They go to Jesus for support. And I mean, wherever he was from, he wasn't from the United States. So he's an immigrant that they are hailing by saying that 6 million wasn't enough. Isn't that kind of ironic?
It's ridiculous. You know, and then, of course, Trump tries to back out. Now he's taking this kind of laid back tone, like, you know, he's saying he's going to concede the election and all this stuff. But dude, I mean, this mild tone is like, if he thinks that he deserves a cookie for finally finding the right words, you know, he better fire up the oven and bake that shit himself, because I'm not buying it. Like he's only saying that because he has to. I mean, you can't, in no way can you call these people patriots. And certainly, I mean, given, like, I mean, think about the last tweet that he fired off before he was, like, temporarily banned from Twitter, right? At a moment when the Capitol building had been breached, all of the lawmakers were in hiding and in fear for their lives. People were being shot. And this guy's talking about how, you know, he's still talking about this landslide election victory unceremoniously and, you know, viciously stripped away. He said, what does he say here? Viciously stripped away from great patriots who have been badly and unfairly treated for so long. I'm like, no, hell no. That is not what's happening here. These people are not patriots. The election was not stolen. And you are a fascist. I'm done pretending that Trump's not a fascist. You know, prior to this event, I was like, you know what? Maybe it's a bit too hyperbolic for me to, like, you know, I have a lot of liberal friends, obviously, and they're like, oh, Trump's a fascist. And I'm like, look, it doesn't help anyone to say that, even if, you know what I mean? Because it's just like, there are other fascists in the world who are far worse. But I'm done with that. I'm finished. Trump's a fascist. He's a fucking fascist, and he deserves to be impeached, and he deserves to be thrown in prison. And I hope that he remains just like an embarrassing reminder of how bad it can get if you follow someone like this into the fire.
But let's go back to the election then, because Donald Trump has said that the election was stolen. He has said that since, I don't know, the first predictions of the result. And as you say, he has been to the court saying that it was a stolen election. He has been denied in what do you call it, a trial or
yeah, due process, fair. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, so from my point of view, it must be totally clear that this election wasn't rigged. It wasn't a stolen election. It was a fair election, maybe even more so than some earlier elections where we had interference from, or should I say, maybe interference from Russia, etc.
Sure. Yeah, that was a little surprising that Russia seemed to be missing from this particular election. But to your point, my thoughts are that Trump really shot himself in the foot by demonizing the mail-in ballots. I think it's probably one of the main reasons why he lost. That being said, even though he did lose, it kind of frightens me to admit that 70 million people still voted for this clown.
Yeah. And why is that? What are what were they hoping for?
Look, never underestimate how important it is for people to feel like they're right. It's too late to back out now. There's no buyer's remorse here. You know, I think you're going to see it now after what happened 2 days ago. I think a lot of people are going to, I think a lot of people will try to have their cake and eat it too. You know what I mean? They'll probably say like, well, we believed in his, you know, who he was as a politician and what he stood for and the policies he believed in. But no, what he did was terrible. That was awful.
Yeah, but I mean, they said the same thing in Germany after 1945.
Yeah, Hitler, I agree.
I mean, not to compare them in other means, but they said the same thing. He was a horrible man, but he was our leader, and we believed in him. We're very sorry now, but at that moment, we really believed him. I mean, history keeps repeating itself, even though you shouldn't, of course, compare Trump to Hitler as persons.
No, he definitely did not do the same types of things, but yeah, there are some similarities, and I think you'll have the same kind of regret, or the same kind of admissions. You know, oddly enough, I do think Trump's, he was saying the election was rigged before it even happened, and he knew which states he was going to have a problem with. And interestingly enough, those states are all the states, you know, I'm sure that this is very confusing and like ridiculous to most Swedes. Like the American election system is so stupid in a lot of ways. It's so stupid. And one of the dumbest things about it is that, you know, it can be different in different states, right? The laws can be different in different states. And all the states where Trump knew he was going to have a problem were the states that had Republican state legislatures, which passed a law saying that the ballot counters were not allowed to count the mail-in ballots until after all of the in-person ballots had been counted. Why did they want that to happen? The reason why he wanted that to happen was because it was already predicted that most of the people who were going to vote in person would be Republican, and most of the people who were going to vote by mail were going to be Democrat. So Trump would run up a lead in Pennsylvania, like he did, and then when they started counting the mail-in ballots, suddenly that lead started to disappear. And that made it much easier for Trump to sort of settle into this narrative of, oh my God, you guys, look, the election's being stolen from us. We were way ahead and now it's disappearing. No, that is, I'm sorry, but maybe you call me a conspiracy theorist by saying that, but there's not an accident, in my opinion, that those were the states that wound up in the crosshairs of this ridiculous farce that happened post-election.
But speaking about conspiracy theories, I mean, it seems, without having any proof for it, but Trump supporters seem very keen to accept his conspiracy theories about the election, about, I mean, we have stuff like QAnon and the Pizzagate scandal before that. I mean, why is that? I don't understand. I mean...
Well, with regard to Trump supporters... I mean, the simple answer is that they are, by and large, not very well educated, especially the most extremist ones. But for me, in all honesty, this is kind of where the white privilege thing comes back into play. It's less about them wanting these ridiculous theories to be true, but more about them needing them to be true. Because if they're not true, then they have to admit that they're wrong, right? They have to admit that they are the problem. You know, I mean, conspiracy theories are kind of, they can become very easy to cling on to when they confirm something that you already believe. The logic in conspiracy theory, it kind of works backwards from the way normal logic works, right? You know, normal logic works in such a way where it's like, well, I want to know the answer to a question, right? So you start looking into the things that affect the answer to that question, and you gather information and knowledge, and you come to a conclusion or some kind of answer to that question. Conspiracy theories work backwards. They work from the conclusion backwards, right? And through that process, you need to ignore all of the things that disprove this thing that you believe in and cling desperately to the things that you think prove that you were right all along, right?
And I promised myself not to mention the Palmer case all too much, but we see the same thing. Sorry, we see the same thing there. You have to create almost a new universe to fit into your theory.
I can actually give you a better non-Palmer related example. If you look at something like, say, you know, and again, this for me, this is about race, this is about white privilege. If you think about the way it works, you know, when you have people that think that all black people are, you know, lazy or, you know, commit crimes or these kind of things, it's like, the black guy commits a crime, Muslim people commits crimes. It generally becomes an indictment of the entire black race or all Muslims, right? But when a white guy, like, say, for instance, rapes a woman, you know, which happens every day, no one's standing up and saying we have some kind of larger systemic issue with white men that needs to be dealt with immediately, or the country's going to go into, you know, hell in a handbasket. That's not the way it works. These people, look, they want this stuff to be true. And they'll cling to any kind of ridiculous information that that affirms that belief that they already hold. Now, the downside to this, I mean, you may ask, you know, some, like, I don't know, maybe some people think that we're like sort of the epicenter of conspiracy theories in America. I don't know, maybe that's true. But I can say in defense of American conspiracy theorists, in some ways, it doesn't help when the American government oftentimes manages to prove them right. Right. I mean, the examples are kind of endless. The government, you know, lied about why we went into Vietnam. They lied about when we went into Iraq. They lied about giving syphilis to black soldiers. They lied about spying on the entire country.
Watergate.
Yeah, they probably lied about JFK, maybe MLK. Certainly lied about mind control experiments. You know, we've done a lot of bad shit throughout history. So this suspicion of the federal government in some ways is quite valid, right? That being said, you know, I think it's getting worse now too because of social media, obviously. Again, you come back to this idea of journalistic integrity. It's like, you know, anybody can write a fucking press release now. I can do one right now. I have all the tools on my computer to make a fake CNN news story and post it up on the internet. I could do it in 5 minutes.
I mean, we have a story there where you know, the community flashback on the internet, like a discussion forum, and one person tried to see how good the media are at controlling the sources. So he sent out, as you say, a fake press release saying he was, I don't know, the first Swede, or he was on his way to the top of Mount Everest without, you know, oxygen and stuff. And he got a live interview from his apartment in I think it was Studio 1, the really, you know, high standard journalistic program in Swedish radio. He said that he was at the base camp on his way up to the top, but he was in his apartment in Järfälla, I think it was. You have a clear point. It isn't too hard to fool media.
You know, also, I think one of the problems with where media comes into it, where if you could say that media has some blame in this current conspiratorial environment, you know, nowadays we have 24-hour media. There's a lot of competition. There's money in media, which didn't used to be the case when I was a kid. When I was a kid in America, you know, the main channels like ABC, CBS, and NBC, they had a media department and they had an entertainment department. The entertainment department, where they had all the fun shows and stuff, that's where they made all the money. And they made all that money because the news department didn't have to make money. All they had to do was tell you the truth, right? That being said, there was a shift somewhere in the late 70s where the media department started to take marching orders from the entertainment department so that they could increase revenue share. And now, not only are they worried about money, they're also very much concerned. I think they're too concerned with being first and not concerned enough with being correct. There is this emphasis on being first. We were the first ones to break the story. You know what? I don't give a fuck who the first person was to break this story. What I care about is the story correct? That's all I want to know.
As an American, how has the U.S. changed this 4 years with Donald Trump? I mean, looking back at how it was before, we have touched it a little bit, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a lot of changes. I mean, I want to reiterate, you know, this is not... The events that we've just witnessed 2 days ago, yes, this is new. But this ideology is not. It really isn't. I would say, honestly, I think really probably the biggest change is how, you know, we had social media before. But again, as we were talking before, I think this idea that you have more and more people who are turning to social media for their news, and more people are publishing things that, in my opinion, on social media are not news. And you have literal fake news on social media. And whether it's being cranked out by Russian trolls or, you know, political operatives who are just interested in getting their base all flared up with some kind of bullshit narrative that's not actually true. I think social media really needs to look itself in the mirror, especially for the next election, because we know now that this is not what social media was intended for, right? I'm down with that. There's a great documentary on Netflix called The Social Experiment, I think it's called. And one of the things that they talked about, there was the guy who was like co-inventor of the like button, which is like, that's weird. I never sat here to think that someone actually sat down and invented the like button. It's very funny. And he was like, you know, when we did this, we basically kind of had this idea that this would create more peace and harmony and connection in the world because it gave people a way to sort of, you know, hey, look at this. Like, oh, I like that. He was like, we had no idea what it was going to turn into. And he almost felt like, you could tell he felt very shameful about it.
He created a monster.
He did. And social media really did become this kind of weird monster, or it either became a monster or it awakened the monsters inside of us, I guess you could say. And once we were all provided with an opportunity to have a platform, not all of us really wanted to use it. In the most harmonious of ways. And now you have a situation where I personally think that sites like Facebook should be just completely rid of all political content, because it's not the place where you should go to find news. And the amount of people that are going there to post fake news, I can totally imagine that it's just too much of a wave for the people, the employees of Facebook, to take it all down. It's too hard. And you had examples of this during the election where you had people, you know, with a great camera set up and a green screen and good lighting, essentially pretending to be in a news studio, showing that Donald Trump was ahead in the electoral count, not Joe Biden. And they were sending this feed out to all these Republicans. And they were like, whoa, CNN's lying. They say Biden's ahead. And it's like, no, dude, the other guy's lying. So I think our biggest problem is how we're going to figure out a way to move forward as politics has started to kind of poison the waters of social media.
But I mean, when Donald Trump posted about stolen elections and election and stuff on Twitter, he got a little note under saying this information about the election may not be correct and stuff. Is that the way to go, or is it too mild, or is it? How do you see it?
No, it's not the way to go, because it works for you and me, right? We can look at it and go, oh, that's cool. Twitter's finally doing something about Donald Trump lying on Twitter. But it doesn't work for his followers. It only makes them feel more angry. It only makes them feel more convinced that the media is out to get them. It only, you know, it further justifies this ridiculous narrative that they believe in, you know, that they're being screwed somehow. I don't think there's any way around it. I don't think there's a half-ass way to do it. I just think that you have to rid social media of politics, period. Somehow. I'm not saying I know how to do that. I just think it just doesn't belong there.
I was thinking, just, we talked about it before, but I mean, it's one thing that to believe that an election was stolen, because an election is a very complex thing. Not everyone understands the process. We, as a European, we absolutely don't understand the process of an American election. But I mean, we have these examples before with, for example, QAnon. I think it was it a Reddit user or something that said that he was a person with a Q clearance, as I understand it, high security clearance, posting, I mean, the most, I would say, the most ridiculous thing about the pedophile ring in around politicians in Washington and stuff. I mean, the election is one thing. It can be complicated, but how in the world can someone believe that? I mean, Donald Trump could just ride the wave that this user created for him.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's probably many answers to that question. Like, how do people fall for that stuff? And in some cases, you know, I can say from my own experience, you know, when I spend time around my relatives who lean in this particular direction, it is kind of fascinating to sit there and spend time with them and to hear someone say, hey, by the way, it turns out that, well, okay, well, so here's the thing that's kind of interesting about QAnon specifically, is that it's not necessary. It is also not really a new theory. They're rehashing an old theory, but putting a little twist on it, right? So it's essentially, for your listeners, the simple way to describe it is that it's basically this kind of, like, you know, the Illuminati are controlling the world, right? And Trump is the only guy who can save us from that effort. That's sort of the most basic version of the QAnon conspiracy. And so you've already started by putting one piece of something that these people already believe in And then you add on top of it something that they already like, having an effect on it, right? So they're like, well, you know, there's only a handful of people that control everything in the world, the George Soroses and the all the Bilderberg people and the Rothschilds and all those people. They're the ones that are basically running things. And hey, by the way, did you hear that Trump is the only one who can stop them? Wow. Yeah. Okay. I already believe the Illuminati thing. I know. Fuck. Everybody knows that, bro. Like, everybody knows the Illuminati's controlling shit. But what I didn't know is that now we have our savior. That's cool. I'm in on that. Let's go. Because prior to this QAnon thing, the Illuminati conspiracy was just something that people would complain about, but they always knew, like, well, you know, yeah, that's the world we live in, and that sucks. But, you know, there's no solution. What do we do? And throwing Trump as the twist into that QAnon conspiracy, you've suddenly added this idea of a solution to the Illuminati problem, right? And that, I think, is why the QAnon conspiracy became so popular, because it came with a solution.
But I'm thinking of it like like a cartoon or a Marvel movie or something. You have all those bad guys, and then you have President Trump in like a Superman costume, and he should save the world. I mean, to me, it is unbelievable. I understand what you say, and I think you're right. But I mean, somewhere along the route, you just have to check the facts. Is this plausible? Is this for real? I mean, but as you say, social media is one thing. Everyone can post whatever they want and make it sound plausible. So,
well, the other problem with that is that, you know, not only have people stopped watching actual news, and just sort of getting this affirming news from places like Facebook and Twitter, now you have a very real issue where, I mean, we now have, after this election, incoming members of Congress who are supporters of this QAnon conspiracy. They are in our Congress.
In the Congress?
Yeah. This new Congress will have members of Congress who believe that the QAnon conspiracy theory are true. And whether they actually believe that or not, or whether they said that to get elected, I don't know. But it doesn't matter, because these people will do anything to get elected. The woman who just lost in Georgia, she was a supporter of QAnon. Kelly Loeffler is her name. I have to say that as a Georgia voter, I voted from Sweden, mail-in ballot. And this first time in my lifetime, first time in 20 years. Oh, no, it's not the first time in my lifetime. It's the first time in my memory. First time in 20 years that we've ever elected a Democrat to the U.S. Senate since in the last 20 years. First time we've ever elected a black man to the U.S. Senate, ever. First time ever. So I'm pretty proud of that. I was really excited on election night to see that Georgia had a part to play in this flip, to see Georgia as a swing state now. There's not a lot of time. I would joke frequently with my wife that whenever the news comes on and they say in Georgia today, I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, what's it gonna be? It's never good. It's always like, you know, oh, they've banned the teaching of evolution, or, you know, gay people are evil or something. It's always something. It's something horrible. Whatever comes after in Georgia today is never a good sentence. But for once, in this election, it was, and I was super excited about that.
If you look at the 2021 and the coming 4 years, I mean, will it be? And there will be a difference with the new president, but will it be some kind of? I mean, the U.S. seems very divided right now. Will that heal in the coming 4 years, do you think?
I really hope so, but I don't know. I have a few. I've seen this enough times to know how this works, and it usually just takes a little time and distance from a horrible event like what we witnessed the other day, for people to sort of settle back into their camps, so to speak. I'll say this. I think the Democrats have a golden opportunity because at the moment they have all of the moral high ground. That being said, I don't know. There's going to be a blowback. Republicans are going to start accusing Democrats of being communists and socialists again when they start talking about policy stuff. I mean, that kind of stuff's definitely going to come back. Democrats historically have always found a way to shoot themselves in the foot. They're like the guys who bring gloves to a bare knuckle fist fight a lot of times. I think your social Democrats are maybe guilty of that sometimes, perhaps, if I can be so bold as to make a comment upon Swedish politics. But certainly watching the rise of SD, watching how the parties have dealt with that, I would say they brought kid gloves to a bare knuckle fist fight with regard to SD. I mean, look, Biden has his work cut out for him. He really does. I'm not a huge fan of Biden. I voted for him because I obviously wasn't going to vote for Trump. I still would have rather have voted for someone like Bernie Sanders. I'm sure Sweden likes Bernie Sanders. He certainly likes you guys. He talks about how he wants Scandinavian style socialism in American social democracy anyway. You know, but at this point, I think with regard to, you know, everything that happened over the last 4 years, and you know, everything that's going to happen over the next 4 years, and especially when having to stare down the barrel of dealing with this pandemic, which is, you know, not going away because of the election, and it's not going away because it's 2021 instead of 2020, which is so stupid to hear people talk about that. But at this point, I honestly feel like a fucking tomato can could do a better job than Trump. So, you know, I really do. I think you and I could probably run the country better than him, I would imagine.
But I mean, I just have one thing, because you said that people in the, was it the Congress that believed in the QAnon conspiracy theory? Do you think that we will see Stefan Löfven believing in Olof Palme got AIDS and fled the country to come back and get shot?
I cannot even begin to imagine Stefan Löfven having a press conference saying, you know, that Scandium Anon theory was bullshit. It turns out Palme had AIDS. He's still alive, actually. He lives in Switzerland. He's got a nice little castle down there. Yeah, so it was the AIDS thing. No, I don't see that. I think Stefan Levien's in a little trouble at the moment. He goes to the shopping mall. I understand that people are upset about that. I think it's kind of funny. I take the pandemic seriously. But from an American, I think Swedish scandals, political scandals, are just adorable. Like, if your biggest problem is that your prime minister went to the fucking mall in the middle of the pandemic, like, call me when they start storming Stadshuset. You know what I mean? Part of the building. Like, we got some real shit going on over in America.
But last question then. Who do you think would have handled these 4 years with, I mean, everything from international crisis to pandemics best? Do you have, like, your favorite president from the past, or someone that you hope will become president in the future, something like that?
Well, I don't know. I guess the first part of your question, I mean, any president prior to Trump would have done a better job, honestly. I mean, you know, in my opinion, a great leader is someone who knows how to weigh the pros and cons in an attempt to make a decision that would lead to the best possible result for the most amount of people. As president of a nation, that's just kind of your job, right? Trump is too obsessed with himself to do what's best for the many. He only cares about what's best for himself. As far as the other part of your question, I'm not really sure if I have a favorite president. I mean, I've been fairly critical of them all. Naturally, I thought Obama was great. I mean, I think he did a pretty good job considering that he's a Kenyan-born Muslim. I mean, I've always really liked Jimmy Carter. Maybe that's because I'm from Georgia, and so is he. You know, but mostly, you know, he's done it a lot. Mostly he's really well known for the things that he did after he left office, starting Habitat for Humanity, building homes for low income people, negotiating peace treaties. He's, you know, he's pretty great dude. But it was funny. I was poking around. I was looking at some, because you had sent me some stuff about these questions. And I think I realized, I look back, you know, because I don't know a lot of these presidents. I mean, we've had 45 at this point. But I learned something that I found kind of fun. I think one of my favorite presidential stories is the sixth president of the United States, John Quincy Adams, apparently was quite fond of skinny dipping. So much so that he would jump naked at 5 a.m. into the Potomac River in Washington, D.C. as part of his morning routine. And I personally feel like it's kind of a shame that presidents can't do that anymore. You know what I mean? It's sort of the downside to having too much media around, you know, like you're going to get caught. But like, can you imagine like if that was still like kind of OK, you know, like that was just something that presidents did. Like it was, yeah, well, the president, he's going to take all his clothes off and jump in the Potomac River. Imagine Stefan Levin taking all his clothes off and jumping into Lake Mathurin every fucking morning. How much fun would that be? Right. Oh, there goes Stefan. Hey, Stefan. Hey, how's it going? Just going from a morning dip, you know, but I feel like we take all this stuff way too seriously and we need to,
lighten up maybe?
Lighten up a little bit. I mean, there's some scary shit that happened 2 days ago. But I think finding some sort of dark comedic path through this madness is the thing that's going to keep us all sane, I guess you'd say. That and more skinny dipping.
But so the final words then, don't take life or politics too serious and more skinny dipping.
Yeah, more skinny dipping.
Thank you so much for having the time to talk to me again. We have talked a lot about the Palmer case. And listeners out there, be sure to watch We Got This. I don't know, is it still on SVT Play or is it only Sundance now?
It's not on SVT Play at the moment, but it will soon be back on Swedish television on Viaplay. I don't have an actual date for that, but it's going to come back on Viaplay sometime this year, I think.
Innan vi avslutade intervjun kom vi in på skillnaderna mellan USA och Sverige i och med att Skiff levt i båda länderna. Och det visade sig att dagens gäst hade något att säga till oss svenskar.
I've decided a long time ago, and I said this to my wife actually just yesterday. After what happened the other day, I've never been more certain of my decision to both move to and to continue living in Sweden. This is a great country, and you know there's a lot to be said for the way things are done here. The politics here may be boring, but I'll take boring over what's happening in the U.S. any day right now. At least everything works, you know what I mean, for the most part. I don't know. I just feel like this is a better place to have a family. It's a better place to raise children. At its core, I think Sweden, you know, is a good place filled with good people who believe that it's important to look out for its people, and I really appreciate and admire that.
That's really nice to hear. It's really nice to hear. I think we Swedes take it all too much to granted that we have a somewhat privileged way of living, I would say.
I think you guys, maybe it's this Janteloggen thing, but I don't think you guys realize how great this place is. I really don't. I don't think you get how great you have it, how rare it is to have a country like this that functions so well. Sure, of course, there's problems. There's problems in every country. But I don't think you guys realize how awesome it is here, actually.
Skiff, thank you so much for talking to me again. It was very interesting and I hope to hear from you soon again.
Pleasure was mine.
Med det säger vi tack till Skiafina och Mosara för det här samtalet. Jag hoppas att ni blivit åtminstone lite klokare kring det som händer i USA av det Skif hade att berätta. Återigen påpekar vi att de åsikter som kommer fram i avsnittet är gästens egna och inte nödvändigtvis behöver spegla poddens inställning. Det här avsnittet kommer också att ges ut på svenska veckan efter att det engelska avsnittet släpptes. Då kommer Dan Hörning och jag att återskapa intervjun, fast på svenska. När vi pratade om stormningen av Kapitolium sa Skiff att det fanns bilder och videor på hur vakter och poliser släppte in demonstranterna och hur de tog selfies med de personer de skulle skydda byggnaden emot. Det här var känt redan då, men det har senare också bekräftats i tidningar och tv. Bland annat har Washington Post och CNN rapporterat om detta. Vad tycker ni om händelserna i USA i början av 2021 och under de senaste 4 åren? Skriv gärna av er på facebook.com/tankom.se. Glöm inte heller att ni kan stötta oss med valfri summa för att hjälpa podden att växa och bli ännu bättre. Du hittar alla länkar du behöver i avsnittsbeskrivningen. Stort tack för ditt stöd. Det här var veckans avsnitt av Tänk om som gjordes av mig, Tobias Henriksson på PRS Media. För mer information om mig och mina projekt, besök facebook.com/prsmedia.se eller gilla oss på Instagram där vi heter PRS Media. Ett ord, små bokstäver. Låten i vårt intro och outro heter Life Decisions och görs av Remember the Future. Övrig musik och ljudeffekter levereras av Epidemic Sound. Stort tack till alla som fortsatt att stötta oss på Patreon, men framförallt, stort tack för att du lyssnar på Tänk om.